always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Marie, I'll tell you, I absolutely agree with that. There should. You could tell that Joe Biden comes in, he's jacked up, and then as the hour goes by, he slowly winds down. So the American people need to understand if they're giving him some injection so that he can actually look like he's coherent and he's with us, because the other parts of the time, he's not. This is why we want to get the Hur tapes, because obviously during that session with Robert Hur, things did not go well. The American people need to understand what is the true mental capacity of Joe Biden.
Well, there you go. There's Congressman Byron Donalds, rumored to be a potential candidate for governor in the great state of Florida, talking about the upcoming debates and the fact that Joe Biden, not the leader of the most transparent White House of all times, trying to prevent people from seeing what his true mental state might be in that Robert Hur testimony. Welcome back to the program. I'm here. Joey's here. Chris Harps is here.
I think the fact Byron Donalds showed up in a Trump suit last week at the criminal trial with the red tie, white shirt, blue suit shows me, I think he's much more interested in the vice presidency than Florida governorship at this time. I think the Trump suit kind of gives
probably
away.
Throwing his hat in the ring. Hey, the good news for Byron is that decision on VP is going to be made probably in the next 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah. And if he's not chosen, well, then he'll still be able to run for governor of Florida, which I think doesn't come up for a little while. But we will continue to monitor all of that. Welcome back to the program. Hour number two here on a very busy Manic Monday. We've been covering everything from the international to the national to the statewide to the regional to the local. We're going to have the speaker stump speech here in a second, where I'm going to put a little bow on the Missouri legislative session for now as we continue to unpack some of the bills that were passed. Susie Moore, of course, deputy managing editor at Red State and frequent commentarian here at News Talk STL. You hear her more to the point commentaries frequently throughout the week. She'll join us to break down and analyze the biggest Red State headlines of the day, including the stories that she has most recently published as well.
Got to get your thoughts, Tim, on this article in the Post-Dispatch. Just came out. Governor Missouri won't pay out in defamation case against senators. Your thoughts?
I don't know why Governor Parsons being so vindictive and playing such small ball with the group of senators that has this matter. This is the same governor who issued a very questionable pardon of KC Chiefs coach, what's his name? Kansas City, Andy Reid. Andy Reid's son got in that horrific DWI-related accident, caused severe harm to that young girl. Mike Parson, because, you know, his biggest accomplishment, I'm sorry, over the last few years has been attending more Super Bowls than any other Missouri governor. He bothered to do that, but now, why?
Can you blame him then if the Chiefs are good?
That's fine.
So if the Chiefs are going to Super Bowl, you're the governor of Missouri, you're going to be going.
But why is he bothering?
You know, I got a gate.
I know. Why is he bothering with these? Why is he bothering, Chris, with this case involving these three senators?
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
We do have a separation of powers, right? The Attorney General's office has decided whether they did it rightly or wrongly. Mm-hmm. The Attorney General's office has made a decision after careful consideration, I would presume, and has decided to represent these folks. It looks like Parson is being very vindictive and small here to me.
Yeah, as I said, you can't blame Parson about the Super Bowl things, man. I mean, Chiefs has gone to Super Bowl
who paid for it?
Out of the last 4 years, so he's going to be going to Super Bowls, but I get you.
Every time I did something as speaker, I was on the front page of the Post-Dispatch. I mean, come on, they call me Timmy Tickets, for God's sake. I think that's I don't know why the governor would bother with something like this. He's running an entire state. He's going on a trade mission, I think, is he going to
and
Italy?
And there's animosity.
There is.
Between some of the representatives from the St. Charles County area. We saw last year when he stripped out some legislation that the legislators want from that area. And it seemed like it was a spiteful situation. One dealt with clean water, wasn't it? Something in St. Charles County dealing with clean water.
Governors are supposed to take the high road. They're supposed to be above all this. And unfortunately, this looks like a case of punching down to me, not punching up. Mm. So I would just leave it at that.
Could he be ticked about the governor's appointments at the beginning of the year, and this is payback for him in some kind of way?
Possibly. I think he's also mad because the House rolled the Senate and the governor's office on the governor's budget. Mm. Mike Parson was trying to spend a record $52.5 billion, and Cody Smith, the House budget chairman, said, no, we've got tough times ahead. Everybody says we've got tough times ahead. Governor, why in the world are you spending every dollar in the kitty? Shouldn't we carry some money forward? So all hail to Cody Smith. I think the first time ever the House has rolled the Senate and the governor on the budget recommendations. And it's a good thing for us, the taxpayers, because he saved $1.7 billion that will carry over to the next year. Chris, everybody says all this gravy train is coming to an end, all this COVID cash, the Biden bucks, it's all drying up. Why would you want to spend every single dollar when you've got this potential fiscal cliff ahead?
Yeah, it's definitely drying up. I think I read a report a couple of weeks ago that showed that the pandemic savings that Americans had dried up in March. And I think that was one of the federal agencies put out the report. Mm-hmm. All that extra surplus pandemic money, Americans have used that up last March.
Chickens are coming home to roost. Mm-hmm. Who used to say that? Reverend Wright, right? Obama's guy used to say that all the time. The chickens are coming home to roost.
Or you want to take it back. Malcolm X was
famous. Does it go back to that?
Malcolm X made
it
famous.
Okay. I wasn't around then.
What's
that? You know your history on that. The fat lady hasn't sung yet. That's one of the big headlines at redstate.com. Susie has been really closely following the Trump trial, and so she'll be able to give us some of the nitty-gritty. There was all this drama today with the judge sparring with Robert Costello, who suffers no fools, in the courtroom today. That trial's got to be coming to an end. Maybe a final day or two, and then they'll have closing argument. It should wrap up this week, Chris. And then,
that's what they've been saying this week.
And then Trump is going to be unchained, I guess, unless he's convicted, but nobody's predicting any jail time for him. This case, folks, after everything we've talked about, the little that we know about that we've talked to you about, this case is going to be appealed no matter what the jury verdict is. And then, Chris, it looks like Trump's in the clear until after the election, because both the Fani Willis case in Georgia and the Jack Smith case appear to have been delayed till after November 5th.
So one thing that's never been really stated clearly, if Trump is convicted in this case, will he be able to stay out pending appeal, or would it be a straight go to jail thing pending appeal? I mean, what do you think would happen? It would hard for me to see them sending a former president of the United States immediately to jail, but these are,
I can answer that,
crazy, unprecedented times.
Yeah. So let's assume that this Class E felony, which is the lowest felony you can have, in the state of New York. Let's say it does have some water. I don't believe it does. I think they've concocted this out of thin air. Chris, that's the lowest level felony. Look, one day in jail is too long for every free American who has not done anything wrong. But, I don't know what the jail sentence is on a Class E, probably 1 to 2 years. They're not going to put somebody in prison pending an appeal on a felony that low, generally. Now, with Donald Trump, it seems like we're always making new law and we're making new facts, and so I wouldn't put anything past him. But if it was if this was like a manslaughter case or a murder case, yeah, they might hold the defendant over pending appeal.
Is it a Class E federal felony?
No, because there's no federal jurisdiction here.
But I thought that's the whole crux of this case, because he's bumping this up to a campaign violation.
Right.
That's what makes it supposedly a federal crime.
Here's the problem. He's a state court prosecutor, and that's you just hit on one of the problems of the case. Alvin Bragg has no jurisdiction to prosecute a federal felony. He's basically referring to that and saying the two E misdemeanors plus this federal offense make it all one big felony. Chris, I think the whole thing is a straw man that's been created out of thin air. None of it makes sense. Alvin Bragg doesn't have jurisdiction to try a federal offense. He's a state court prosecutor. So yeah, the whole thing is kind of a raging dumpster fire, to be honest. And that's why I do not believe not even Donald Trump will be held pending appeal if he is convicted. It's going to be interesting to see how long the jury is out after a six-week trial.
I looked this up, his charges. He's charged with 34, as you said, Class E felony counts. And it says here, if the former president is found guilty, he could serve between a year and 4 months and 4 years in prison for each count. What does that mean?
They'll run them consecutively. You know what I mean? Each count. They'll say, okay, you get a year for this one. You get a year for this one. You get a year. And they'll run them consecutively. Right. Yeah. Not concurrently.
Got it.
If that would be the worst case scenario, I don't think he's going to serve a day of jail time.
And that's exactly what this article says. Yeah. Jail time is probably unlikely.
Yes. All right, folks. Well, we've got to get to the speaker stump speech so we can get to Susie Moore, and then we can tell you what's on Larry Connors USA. We have jam-packed hour here. Let's get right to it. We're going to recap and re-wrap up the Missouri legislative session, courtesy of our good friend Paul Hamby and his Liberty Thought of the Week.
Listen to me. Listen to me.
I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for the speaker stump speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
So I thought it'd be very interesting for all y'all to hear what Paul Hamby has to say. We've talked about Paul Hamby every once in a while. I keep threatening to put him on the air. I'm going to have to reach out to him. He lives on the other side of the state, way up in northwest Missouri. I think I saw Paul last October or November. I'm not sure if he was at the Capitol this year or not. I think he might have come down once or twice for like a grassroots event. So my point here is, here's a guy that I have not spoken with, have not been with in a long time, who is a very close observer of the Missouri legislature. He's a little bit older than me, and so he's probably been watching the legislature for a few more years than me. He's definitely, many consider Paul as pretty much a constitutional conservative, and so we probably have generally the same philosophy, but probably have very different opinions about some of the people, the places, and the bills that were passed. So I thought it'd be very interesting for you to hear what Paul wrote without any help from me at all, and I'll tell you what, there's a lot of similarities with what I said last week. So Paul Hamby, he's a great writer. He puts out this little Liberty Thought of the Week, sends it to a lot of newspapers around the state, and some of them publish his work. He says, end of 2024 Missouri Legislative Session Report. The official session ended Friday, May 17th, 2024. First, a couple of good bills that passed, and I actually didn't know about one of these, so I thought that was great that he brought this to our attention. House Bill 1495, that was sponsored by State Representative Dave Griffith in support of veterans' mental health, creates a more rigorous support system for veterans who need it. The goal is to help them deal with mental health crises such as PTSD and to reduce veterans' suicide. The House and the Senate both passed the bill unanimously. Hey, let's give a hand to the Missouri House and Senate, because we've complained about them a lot. We all have, but you know what? That was a really good bill that kind of slipped by me, and probably because there wasn't a lot of controversy, and so it just shot right through. Good for them. Senate Bill 895 safeguards property rights while clarifying landlord-tenant proceedings. I did know about this one. Enhances trespassing laws to protect property owners and expedite removal of unauthorized occupants from vacant properties. Opposes federal lockdown policies. Reaffirms Missouri's commitment to protecting individual liberties and state sovereignty. I know that local representative Ben Keithley, who's a really magnificent lawyer, also worked very hard on that bill. So kudos and congrats for protecting the rights of property owners, landlords, and free marketeers. This session, Paul continues, there were less of the unconstitutional omnibus bills. A lot of us call those ominous bills because of what's in them. Passed. Each bill is to pertain only to one subject, and that must match the bill's title. Folks, that's in statute. That's in the Constitution. Some of the legislators reminded their colleagues of this law on a regular basis, especially Senator Mike Moon. And for that, we should be thankful. Overall, there were a low number of bills passed this year. That would typically be praiseworthy. But most of what passed did expand the size and cost of state government. We now have new regulations, new licensing requirements for doctors, new bureaucracies, and no efforts to reform the most inefficient state government organizations. And remember, folks, this comes from a supermajority Republican legislature. In the Missouri legislature, Paul continues, true liberty-minded conservatives are a small minority. The budget passed earlier this year. It's slightly smaller than last year. It's still 90% larger than 2019. I probably should say that again. It's still 90% larger than 2019. The excuse is that some of this is leftover one-time COVID money from the federal government. If you look at both the federal and state withholding on your pay stub, you're paying for the $51 billion budget. The ethical thing to do would have been to return the unspent COVID money back to Washington, D.C. The budget included more money for highway construction, $100 million for rural and low-volume roads, $53 million for I-29, I-35, $727 million to rebuild I-44. That would seem to be worthy of praise. Our roads do need to be repaired. What's missing is accountability. We just had a huge gas tax increase forced on us 2 years ago. Now MoDOT gets more money. Yet MoDOT's one of the least efficient organizations in the state. The legislature failed to hold them accountable. You know, little aside here, one of the reasons is the legislature has a tough time holding MoDOT accountable because they're all appointed by a board that the governor appoints, and the legislature doesn't have a lot of oversight. That needs to change. The budget includes more money for DESE, public schools, and universities. Every measurable metric for performance of our schools and universities has gone down since 1993. The legislature, however, increases funding and fails to hold them accountable for poor performance. The money goes up, the scores go down. IP reform, the number one issue of the session, did not pass. Speaking of Senator Mike Moon, here's a quote from him as to explaining what happened. The number one priority for Senate Republicans this session was to reform the IP process. Currently, the Missouri Constitution requires a simple majority to amend the state constitution, 50% plus one. Several ideas were presented during session. The one that won over all the others was, in addition to the current simple majority, a concurrent majority of congressional districts voting to ratify the amendment must also occur. So, 5 of the 8 congressional districts would be required, plus the simple majority, to ratify any amendment to the state constitution. Close quote. The House and Senate both have Republican supermajorities, yet they failed to get the top issue passed. The bill handler, Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, along with the Senate Republican leadership, are responsible for this failure, according to Paul Hamby. Please remember this when it comes time to vote in the elections this August. If you tend to vote Republican, you might be outraged and a little bit angry. If you tend to vote Democrat, you had a very good year in the Missouri legislature. And that's the Liberty Thought of the Week by Paul Hamby and the Speaker Stump Speech for today. Kind of a lot of comparisons to what I said last week from Paul. You know what? It really matters now. Especially in a supermajority that's in its third decade, it really matters the type of Republican you send to Jefferson City and to Washington, D.C. Mm. They're not all created equal. So, and some of these Republicans who are voting against these things are in really strong Republican districts. So I question, are they doing the duty of the voters or of the donors? And that's a question we'll have to answer down the road. Chris, how about we talk to Susie Moore next?
Let's do that.
She's coming on next to talk to us about the top red state headlines of the day, an update on the notorious Trump trial in New York City, and the more to the point commentary. All of that's next with Susie Moore, 101.9 94.1, the number one station in the region for live and local conservative talk, News Talk, STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
An international criminal court prosecutor says there is reasonable grounds to believe the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu bears criminal responsibility for war crimes.
Benjamin Netanyahu, who's the Prime Minister of Israel, and Yoav Gallant, the Minister of Defense of Israel. And these are what they're accusing these two men of: starvation of civilians as a method of warfare, as a war crime, willfully causing great suffering or serious injury, willful killing, intentionally directing attacks against the civilian population, extermination, and persecution as a crime against humanity.
Lawfare on the loose, indeed. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
To me, Tim, that's about the equivalent of Japanese bombing Pearl Harbor, killing thousands of our soldiers, destroying ships, infrastructure, and all that, us retaliating with the atomic bombs, of course, and the International Criminal Court saying that we were in the wrong there because we caused untold suffering and devastation.
Mm-hmm. Great.
After we were attacked first. And I don't care that the response is not proportionate. They're the ones that started this war. They're the ones that have the Palestinian Hamas blood on their hands, not mm-hmm. the Israelis or Americans or any of their allies,
great,
in my opinion.
Great point here to remember who the aggressor is in these situations and who needs to try to end the fight. Let's see what our next guest thinks about that and more.
Oh, Susie Q, baby, I love you. Susie Q. the boss.
That's
how about
right.
that?
As she does every Monday afternoon, Susie Moore of Red State joining us once again. We're going to dissect and bisect a lot of the headlines at redstate.com. Susie, isn't the moral equivalency there that the International Criminal Court is trying to establish between genocidal, truly genocidal, Hamas and the Israeli Defense Forces defending themselves? It's fairly disgusting, and it's also kind of terrifying that this is 2024, isn't it?
Isn't it the equivalent of saying there are fine people on both sides?
Oh, yes, well played. Yes. It's not right, is it?
No, it's not. And of all the areas of the law with which I am not terribly familiar, international law would be right up at the top of the list, so I don't want to get on over my skis. But I, in the very back of my mind, had some vague glimmer of a recollection that Israel is, by nature of the way it was established, not necessarily supposed to be subject to this type of legal proceeding, but I might not be right on that. I wouldn't swear to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Susie, we have built you up as the number one Midwest expert on the Trump trial, so of course we want to get your thoughts today on the big bombshell revelations that Michael Cohen is a scumbag and stole money from his attorney, from his employer, excuse me. And also, he admitted on the stand that he will benefit and is benefiting financially from Donald Trump's troubles. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it comes as a surprise to anybody that in addition to being a liar, Michael Cohen is a thief. But, you know, him just flat out admitting it on the stand. And the fact that the New York prosecutors didn't seem to be interested in pursuing any sort of charges for larceny against him is rather interesting, too. It just further highlights something that's been kind of evident over the past week of the trial while he's been on cross-examination, and that is that he is not a credible witness. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for the prosecution, they hinge basically being able to establish their case on his testimony. So then the jury is going to be tasked with deciding as well, assuming the judge doesn't take it away from the jury, which I wouldn't hold my breath on that. The jury is going to have to decide, well, am I going to pick and choose about what's credible here, or are we just going to discount it altogether? In which case, I mean, if they're doing their job, they should acquit. Now, again, with the not holding the breath. But I got to believe there's at least a couple people sitting on that jury that are going to go, you know, if I'm going to say that a former president should go to jail over something, it's got to be something more than this and based on better evidence than this loser.
Mm-hmm. Susie, you have a great piece up that does dissect this latest day of the Trump trial that you published today at redstate.com. Day 19 rolls on. Susie, we had some very interesting things happen. Number one, the prosecution did rest their case, which means they've concluded their evidence. They can come back and put on some rebuttal evidence later on if they want to, but they've put on their in layman's terms, they've put on their main case today. The defense calling its first two witnesses, Danny Sitko and Bob Costello. Susie, could you explain why those two witnesses were called? And I know you may not have seen or heard every word of it, but what was supposed to be the import of their testimony? Why did the defense call them? What was the defense trying to do or to prove?
Yeah. So with Sitko, he's a paralegal that works for Todd Blanche, who's one of Trump's attorneys, who's the lead attorney for Trump in this trial. And he had prepared a chart that basically summarized the 75 calls that were records of 75 calls between Michael Cohen and Robert Costello in the spring of 2018. The reason being, you know, sort of Cohen's conversations with Costello have kind of become an issue since it was revealed that he basically was telling Costello back in that time frame that he didn't think that Trump didn't really have anything to do with it. He didn't have anything on Trump, and this was him acting on his own.
Mm-hmm.
So he testified under cross, Cohen testified under cross this morning that he felt like he spoke with Costello maybe a dozen times. And he kept downplaying their relationship, saying that Costello wasn't his attorney, he never retained him. Well, then the records are brought up by this paralegal, and it shows that there were 75 phone calls.
Aha!
Not 12, 75. And while some of those phone calls were to the law firm, so they could theoretically have been Costello's partner, Jeffrey Citron, who sat on a board with Michael Cohen, clearly there were a number of lengthy calls. Well, there were at least two lengthy calls between Costello and Cohen in that time frame that kind of underlying the fact that there was a relationship established there and that Cohen was speaking at great length to Costello. So what they were trying to do is sort of, once again, show what a liar Cohen is, and then also lay the groundwork to bring in Costello. Tim, you will understand this because you're a former prosecutor. Mm-hmm. It was very clear to me, at least once Michael Cohen started testifying, that there was no way, no how, that the defense should put Donald Trump on the stand. There was no need to, and all they were doing was opening themselves up to disaster because he is kind of a loose cannon. You don't want that person on the stand if you don't absolutely have to put them on there.
I would agree.
And the question was whether they would put Costello on because he testified before Congress last week and kind of, you know, basically highlighted the fact that Cohen's a liar. Well, it sounds to me like Costello was a little bit of a loose cannon on the stand this afternoon. He and the judge got into it so badly that the judge cleared the courtroom. And I guess when the prosecutors were objecting, Costello was like huffing and saying, geez, under his breath, which doesn't speak well for him as a witness, even if he has important information to impart. So I don't know what his game was. I don't know if he was just trying to put on a show for Donald Trump, but that doesn't help Trump's defense. So I'm a little disappointed in hearing that his testimony, you know, came across that way.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
But the bottom line is the defense doesn't have anything else to put on. This is where I was going with that. And that's not necessarily strategically a bad thing. I mean, if you think the prosecution probably failed to meet their burden, which it sounds to me like they did, don't give them opportunities to get there with your own witnesses. But at the same time, you feel naked if you're the defense and you've got nothing to say to the jury after the prosecution rests. So I think sometimes against their better judgment, they feel like they have to say something and they have to put somebody on. And I don't know. Sitko, I think, was helpful. I don't know if Costello is going to wind up being helpful for them or not.
Gotcha.
Speaking with Susie Moore, Deputy Managing Editor at RedState.com. Susie, speaking of areas of law, did you ever think about practicing immigration law?
No.
Good thing. Because, a research group at Syracuse University has said that only about 30% of migrants are now able to find a lawyer to represent them in legal proceedings, compared with 65% 5 years ago. And the main part of it is there's no money in it.
Well, that's not surprising when you consider the fact that most people who are in need, well, I shouldn't say most people, a lot of people who are in need of an immigration lawyer probably are in need of an immigration lawyer because they maybe didn't have the means to jump through the hoops and go through the prescribed process for coming here to begin with. That doesn't surprise me terribly.
Speaking to Susie Moore of Red State, RedState.com, host of the More to the Point commentary, and, of course, a frequent contributor and commentarian here at Newstalk STL. Susie, speaking of the More to the Point commentary, the one that was released this morning, in case folks haven't yet heard it, is titled, It's Not Us, It's You. Which pronouns are we referring to here, Susie? Who are we talking about in this?
We're talking about Joe Biden.
Aha!
But it was because the administration keeps having these, like, you know, White House press briefings and that sort where they, and even Joe himself, where they try to express that they feel like they're doing great, everything's great on their watch, and the American populace just isn't seeing it and just isn't quite getting it.
Uh-huh.
Or to the extent that things are bad, it's not their fault. It's because of COVID or because of Vladimir Putin. So never mind the fact that Joe Biden's been in office now for 3.5 years. So after seeing another episode of that where Corinne Jean-Pierre was basically deflecting and pointing fingers everywhere else but at her boss's desk, I was thinking about how when people break up, there's the whole, you know, it's not you, it's me. You know, you try to let somebody down easy. And I wanted to say the reverse is true here. It's not us. It's them. Mm. It's him. He's that bad. And I'm hoping that the voters will send that message loud and clear in November.
Susie, got to ask you about last week's uproar on the left over the revelation that Judge Ito during January 6, 2020. A flag in front of his home was flown upside down, and that is supposedly the distress signal. When you do that, Judge Alito has said that his wife was the one that flew the flag over that because of a neighborly dispute with the neighbor. Your thoughts on this? Is, I know the left is going to try to make hay out of anything that they can and make it political. I know they're trying to delegitimize the Supreme Court by this. They're asking for Alito to recuse himself from certain cases because of this. Your thoughts as a barrister?
Right. So Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas are the two most staunchest conservatives on the court. I think everyone would agree. And it's interesting that, right now the left is going, you know, bending over backwards to throw everything they can at both of them and try and basically put pressure on them to either step away from cases or that sort of thing. And that's because they know that right now with a conservative majority on the court, some of their pet causes are in peril. You know, I don't know all the specifics of what Mrs. Alito did. It does sound like she was the one who chose to do that. And, you know, judges' spouses are not subject to the code of ethics. The Supreme Court justices technically aren't subject to the federal court of ethics or the federal judicial ethics, but they hold themselves to that standard. But if his wife decided to do that, it's a little hard to say that you must impute that to him and therefore he must recuse himself, just like they've been trying for years with Jenny Thomas to discredit Clarence Thomas. So I think this is one of those things that's kind of a tempest in a teapot.
And as a quick follow, does it bother you as a woman that lately these powerful men, when they get into a little spot, have been throwing their wives under the bus? Menendez said his wife was the one that hid the gold clothes, gold coins in the suit. Alito was saying his wife was the one that flew the flag. Does that bother you that we're throwing you all under the bus?
Well, no. I mean, I don't look at it from a gender perspective because it's their respective spouses, and in this case, it happens to be men that are the ones that are being accused. But let's be fair about this. Jenny Thomas is an outspoken person. She's an individual in her own right, and she's never been shy about her views. So I don't think we've seen Clarence Thomas throwing her.
No, he hasn't.
And I think Samuel Alito, I mean, I have trouble believing that that's not the case. I really have trouble believing that he's the one who flew the flag and yet he's saying, oh, no, she did it. Something tells me that Mrs. Alito is somebody who's not shy about her opinions either. And she probably feels justified in what she did. And I don't see that as a men versus women thing. I'm not somebody who subscribes to that.
I think personally they should have just not blamed each other and just said it was their illegal housekeeper that did it.
Hey!
Oh, Chris.
I think that would have been perfect.
Open up a new can of worms.
That's right. That's a whole new Pandora's box. Susie, the sister told you writing today about the other kerfluffle that the White House is dealing with, and that's the release or the non-release of the actual video testimony of Robert Hur with President Biden. Sister told you writing, the press are strangely incurious, of course they are, as White House makes more troubling corrections to a Biden transcript. So Susie, here's the problem with just the transcript. And I saw all the Democrats this weekend going, we gave you the transcript, we gave you the transcript. Well, now they're correcting the transcript. Susie, they obviously don't want anybody to watch that video before November's election, which is exactly why we all need to see that video before November's elections. This sounds like the Hunter Biden laptop story all over again in a way.
You know, it does. I think there may be two different things going on here. So there's the Hur transcript, and I believe that was from a recorded interview, like an audio recording. And that's creating an issue. And then there was a speech that he just gave over the weekend to the NAACP where the White House kind of went along behind and cleaned up.
So we got two different transcript problems now.
Yeah, there's two different things going on there. But the of the two, I mean, they've been doing this for a long time where they'll clean up his flubs and gaffes in the official transcript that the White House releases of his speeches.
Mm-hmm.
And they just keep getting caught in it because, hello, there's video proof. With the Hur situation, it's really interesting because that audio recording would probably go, you know, it probably isn't going to be favorable to Joe Biden. As bad as the transcript was, I think the audio is probably going to be worse. And they know that. but it's a little hard for them to claim executive privilege over the audio of a transcript they already released. So that's going to be an interesting legal battle to see how that all shakes out.
Susie, I want to get your thoughts on something. We had the controversy last week between Congresswoman Crockett and MTG. She called her a bleach blonde, bad built, butch body. Now, let's think about this for a minute. Now, butch is a term that is usually associated with a lesbian woman, which, you know, I think that that community could consider that offensive. Why hasn't there not been any uproar from the LGBT community and all of that with her using a term that could be offensive to a lesbian woman to ridicule MTG? And also, why aren't they talking about, so what do you mean a butch body? Is that an insult to a lesbian woman? And I know this is a rhetorical question, of course. So why do you not, we're not seeing any backlash, and should there be?
Well, Chris, I think you probably know the answer to that. It's because Jasmine Crockett has a D after her name as opposed to an R. So since she shares their views for the most part, she's going to get a pass. One thing I learned this past week that I did not know before, did you know that Ms. Crockett is a graduate of MICDS?
No way.
Yes, she is.
So she's privileged.
She is indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, she got a good education here, and I don't know if the eyelashes were an issue then or not, but I mean, it's one of those things where you kind of want to just grab the popcorn and watch, but at the same time, you're just like cringing because it's like, really? I mean, come on, guys. Yeah. The Congress shouldn't look like an eighth grade food fight, and unfortunately, too often these days it does, and no one really comes out of that situation looking good. Yeah.
Tony Colombo flip test. If a Republican would have called, a Republican woman would have called a Democratic woman a butch, we'd be talking about that to this day.
100%. Regardless of who started that, then she's using language that would normally get a Republican in hot water for using it.
That is for sure. Susie, thanks for all the great content and commentary. We always enjoy speaking with you as we wrap up the show here on Monday evenings. Yeah. At SmoozyQ on Twitter, redstate.com. We'll talk to you again soon, Susie.
Little programming, though. Susie will be joining me Wednesday Thursday of this week. So looking forward to that, Susie, as always.
Susie, thanks for being here while I'm in the big swamp. I'll be talking to you guys from the road. Thanks for being with us today and this week.
Thanks, guys. Have a great evening.
Mm-hmm. You too as well. 5:47 in the p.m. Man, the show goes by so quickly, especially when we had tons to talk about today. We've got one more jam-packed segment. We'll tell you what's coming up on Larry Connors USA. Chris has got some other items to make sure that we unpack before we hand you off.
The bleach bond. I can't even read this quickly. Bleach blonde, bad build, butch body.
Where'd she come up with that?
I have no idea.
Very allegorical. All right, alliteration I meant. We'll be back with more on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9, 94.1. Thanks for listening to us at News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
5:52 on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. I got to ask you guys, you know, we're in the middle of this cicada. What do you call it?
Cicada.
What do you call it? Overrun? What's the official name for it?
Infestation.
You know, I remember 13 years ago, the last time this happened, my wife, girlfriend then was living in a house in Richmond Heights, and they were everywhere on the trees, the shells and everything. I've got to admit, I've seen two this year. When I was in Springfield for the convention, there was one that was out of its shell that kind of was on the sidewalk. And recently I saw a shell of one. So I have not seen the big infestation. Tim, you're a homeowner with trees and shrubs. Yeah. Have you seen them?
Out in God's country in Eureka, Chris, it's like a freaking symphony. They actually, thankfully, I guess, go to sleep at night because they get quiet when the sun goes down. But Chris, in the heat of the day, like before I come down to the station, they are loud and proud, and they're buzzing around everywhere. And what's worse, where they're worse is in the older neighborhoods or parts of town where the ground hasn't been disturbed in a long time. Some of those trees are covered, and these guys are nasty. I wonder, what is the point of these things? They appear They buzz around and make a lot of racket and are look gross for about 6 weeks, and then they're gone for 17 years.
The only thing I could imagine is maybe they are just a good bird food, yeah. that there are plenty of them for the birds to eat, and then when they all die, they rot away and they fertilize the ground, and then they sit underground for 13 more years and come alive again. You know, when I was listening to the Todd Showalter show, we talked about this earlier, that cicadas are very, very similar to crustaceans, and that if you cook them right, Tim, you could almost think that you're at Red Lobster.
Really?
You know, Red Lobster almost put itself out of bankruptcy recently. Maybe they could have used cicadas. Joey, could eat.
My goal is to eat 65 shrimps tonight. 25 shrimps tonight.
Eat 45 shrimps tonight.
Now, without warning, Red Lobster has announced it's closing 99 restaurants across the USA, all because the popular chain apparently bit off more than it could chew. Last summer, the company announced the Endless Shrimp Deal as a permanent fixture on the menu. But way more customers took advantage of the deal than expected, triggering an $11 million loss.
Wow, I wonder if anybody lost their job, like the person who's in charge of Bud Light marketing lost their job. Because, you know, a company's losing $11 million on a promotion. That's your promotion. Can't look too good on your resume.
Isn't it amazing that this one promotion caused them that much havoc? Like, did no one project this out? And why didn't they just stop it?
Yeah.
Say, you know what? You know what, Chris? Americans, we're forgiving people. If they would have said, ooh, we screwed up with the shrimp thing. We just can't do that anymore. Yeah. Or maybe, like, limit it to, like, two more fill-ups or something. I don't know.
But think about it, though. I mean, when you're putting this promotion together and everything, do you really think that there's people out there that are going to eat 65 shrimp, 45 shrimp? I mean,
this one over here.
Give me about nine.
This one over here in the Adidas jacket.
I'm about probably seven or eight, maybe nine, and I'm done.
Me
how in the world can you eat 45 shrimp? That's
Joey?
Insane.
Well, if you got Instagram followers, you got to entertain. You do it for the lulls and the lights and the heart emojis. Seemed like it turned into a social media trend, is what it looked like.
Ah, there you go. The kids are at fault again.
You know, P. Diddy, of course, he is under a lot of scrutiny, and the video came out over the weekend of him assaulting one of his girlfriends in a hotel elevator. Video shows it. This was Diddy's apology. What do you think? Would you believe this?
This is the first time since that disturbing hotel video surfaced that Combs is speaking out. He says he's sorry about the attack on ex-girlfriend Cassie Ventura.
I was f***ed up. I mean, I hit rock bottom, but I make no excuses. My behavior on that video is inexcusable.
Sean Diddy Combs posted an apology Sunday for his behavior at a Los Angeles hotel in 2016.
And Larry Connors, USA is up next. P. Diddy, you in trouble, my friend. Larry's going to talk about West Point War School blames Biden for civilian deaths, and not going to be politically correct, but there was a catfighter in Congress. Larry Connors will have it up next. You have been listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. Drive safe and have a great evening.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.